Welcome to a Neuroscience episode of the Click Nations Comic Book Chronicles. I am your host, Tim D-O-double-G. And I'm joined by at PCN underscore dirt from the popculturenetwork.com.
Hello, everybody. I'm sober, almost.
We'll see if that stays the same as the show.
I'm going to try not to.
Jim Beam. And the man behind the sound effects is our own Agent 70.
What's up, everybody?
And he's busy at work right now and can't join us on the show, but our other co-host is at Roddy Cat on Twitter. Make sure to follow his Twitter account at News Nerds Need for all your relevant pop culture geek news. And of course, make sure to also go to theclicknation.com where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews. Follow the Twitter account at theclicknation. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/theclicknation. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/theclicknation. Subscribe also on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Circle the Google Plus page. Just search for The Click Nation. Use the hashtag Comic Book Chronicles on your favorite social media accounts to join in the conversation. And if you ever have any feedback you want to have read on a future show, send that on over to theclicknation@gmail.com. And we want to remind everyone that we record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. So if you're ever home and you want to tune in, just make sure to go to theclicknation.com, and at the top of the page will be the link with your YouTube video to watch the show.
Around 9 o'clock Eastern.
Yes, give or take a couple minutes.
There's a clock sound effect.
Yes. That's perfect. Like I'm watching 60 Minutes.
I get to be morally safer.
Nah.
So last week, Ryder Cat and myself both ventured off to Charlotte, North Carolina to attend the Heroes Con convention. Which was a great time had by all. This was my first time meeting Roddy, great guy. We met up at one of the Marvel writer panel. But let me do the best I can to go over some of the events from chronological order. Let's see. I got to Charlotte around 4 o'clock. Friday afternoon, so the con had started sometime in the morning time, so didn't really miss too much. Got to the event, went to the artist alley, which was thankfully not that packed, so it was easy to walk around. They had the tables and the aisles were spaced equally apart, so it was easy to walk through. One of the problems I had with MegaCon last year was, I guess along with how many people were there, it was kind of hard to move through the aisles, but even Friday and Saturday, that wasn't really a problem on the show floor.
Excellent.
Let's see. So, yes, I made it to the Marvel panel, Marvel writers panel, I'm sorry, and the writers they had on hand were Kelly Sue DeConnick, Dennis Hopeless, Jason Latour, and Jim Starlin. And we got to the panel in progress, so I missed the beginning part of it. But when I got there, it was kind of pretty laid back, and the writers were kind of just answering questions from the moderator and questions from the crowd. One funny segment was talking about how event comics can you know, what's the event, the impact of event comics on books? And Kelly Sue chimed in saying how Infinity kind of derailed her Captain Marvel run. She was like, if you read 14 and then jump ahead to 17, it reads fine. But, you know, the three issues, I guess, where it tied in kind of didn't make sense. But then she also made sure to add that, you know, event books sell. That's the reason companies keep making them. So if your book has a chance to tie in with it, that's it can grant your book maybe another 3 or 6 months worth of, you know, time before getting, you know, possibly getting canceled. So you kind of have to weigh the good with the bad of if do you want this sales bump and, you know, possibly help save your book a couple more months, or do you want to not join in with the fun and tell the story that you want to tell? And she even said how she complained to Brian Michael Bendis one time through email, and he sent her a reply back saying, like, just say no. Say no. And she was like, why did I never think of this before? She was like, I didn't know it was an option that you could say no. So supposedly another event came up that she used that ploy with, and it actually worked. So I'm assuming it was original sin, but who knows? It would make that makes sense.
It makes sense.
So that was fun. Starlin.
Surprised to hear Starlin's on that panel. You know, yeah,
he talked a lot too.
Yeah, I mean, given that, you know, there's been some friction over, you know, what he wants to use, you know, what is it, the use of Warlock?
Adam Warlock, yeah.
Exactly. So, oh, that's right, Adam Warlock. Let me not confuse him with Warlock from New Mutants. But yeah, Adam Warlock. So I'm kind of surprised
he wants to use Adam Warlock and they won't let him?
Yeah.
Yeah, supposedly he wanted to use Warlock in some of his, I guess, like, whatever stories that are off by themselves, whatever annuals or original graphic novels, whatever they are. And he was told that there's a...
An embargo, maybe?
Yeah, embargo on Warlock. And supposedly the embargo was lifted recently, so now everything's good. And supposedly the rumor was that Rick Remender had something planned for him with whatever big thing he was building with Uncanny Avengers, and how the Infinity Watch guest starred, made like one appearance in an issue not too long ago. But everything's good now. So, Starlin made a good joke about how, of course, I guess he had to take a chance to rip Dan DiDio. He said something about how things changed all the time with Dan, and he could never make up his mind. You thought the story was going one way, then he changed his mind and wants something else. So basically he was saying, like, don't trust Dan.
Oh, wow.
Which was funny. Let's see, what else? Pull up my notes. So on the artist floor, the main attractions, at least from what I could see, because this is on day one, which was Friday.
Oh, the line where the lines were longest.
Yeah, which they had Scotty Young and Ryan Stegman side by side at like a table, so there was a nice little crew of people there, and of course the Conic Fractions Zdarsky Sets Criminals table had a lot of people there. Got to meet Ryan Stegman, who, of course, knew of Comic Book Chronicles from Agent 70 and Special Edition New York City the previous weekend.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he was like, oh, you're Tim, dog. Like, I am.
I'm sure you didn't say it that way. Oh, you're.
But yeah, he was aware of who I was, so that was kind of cool. And I got him to sign a sketchbook that got from a Kickstarter he was associated with a year or so ago, and Superior Spider-Man number 1, which I already had signed from Dan Slott. So
nice.
Finished that off.
eBay.
It was funny, like, no one asked if they wanted to, the stuff I did get signed, no one asked if I wanted anything specialized, you know, with really? My name, so it couldn't be resold. I thought about bringing it up, I was just like, let me sign it.
A lot of times I'll hand something to him and I'll be like, can you put like 2 Doug or 2 Dirt, you know, on it? something like that, you know, so it's not, you know, just like, hey, can you make this worth an extra $5, you know?
I know for sure. I was about to say, from what I remember of what I got signed at Special Edition, Mike Allred asked me, you know, he definitely put my name down and asked for it before he signed. So I guess he's jived to that bit of, you know, secondary market strategy. So, but other than that, I believe he's the only one that actually came right out and asked, you know, my name before signing.
I know yesterday Scotty Young posted a tweet saying, like, great, you know, there's commission for someone at HeroesCon, and it was like a link to the eBay page where the guy was selling it for like $25.
Wow.
I mean, it wasn't anything like fancy either. It was just like a quick Invincible sketch. And it wasn't even, the guy wasn't even selling it for a lot. At least the opening bid was like $25.
Weird.
Yeah. Let's see. After the writers panel, walked around with Roddy Cat. He took my picture with Mitch Gerards, which I shared.
Yeah, I saw that.
Afternoon. He was cool. We were joking because, was it Thursday night after the show last week? Of course, I was up late packing and whatnot, and he had tweeted out, you know, he was like, I just got to Charlotte. So I made sure to tweet him, like, I'll be there tomorrow.
And nice.
Then we got to talking about Property Brothers somehow, so that's what we talked about Friday when I got there.
The show on, what is it, HGTV?
Yeah, HGTV.
Seriously?
Yeah,
I guess don't know what that is.
I watch it a lot. I tend to have the TV.
Yeah, HGTV. Actually, I hated to admit it, but our cable package got an increase recently. If you can imagine that, Comcast actually increased our channels. And we get HGTV now, and I've started watching Love It or List It is one of those. Yep. And then the one with there's like a young couple that buy houses and flip it, flip or flop or something like that.
I like flip and flop. They're hilarious. Because they always buy these crappy houses and then get stuck like trying to borrow money to sell it and stuff. It's like, are you guys good at your job?
It's like, we're totally going to flip this house quick. You've got mold in the entire house. Oh yeah. My God. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, so I hate to admit it, but yeah, I've been watching a lot of HGTV too.
Yeah, so obviously Mitch does too, so that he was a good guy. And let's see, going back to the writers panel, Latour did a lot of talking. They got to joking, like, someone in the crowd asked, how is it to write something? And it came back around to, like, the question, okay, I got it. The question was, does the story go one way? What happens if you have your story planned out and then, you know, events or stuff that comes up makes you, you know, have to take the story in a whole new direction? And Latour was like, when Marvel declares that Wolverine's going to die at the end of the year and I only have 6 issues to write him in. So I guess he only has Wolverine to write for 6 issues of Wolverine and X-Men before he's killed off. And then they got the joking about a Ghost Wolverine book, which he said he killed, right?
Mm.
I think the comic made a joke about Ghost Wolverine, and he was like, "Oh, I'd write the hell out of that book."
Mm.
And Hopeless announced that Avengers Undercover number 10 is the final issue for that, but he already has another Marvel book lined up that he couldn't talk about after that ends. So. Which I teased him about a little bit at his table after the writer's panel. But yeah, he was cool too. I bought Avengers Arena Volume 1 from him and got him to sign it.
Nice.
And I think that was it for day one. Oh, Cary Randolph I met also. Bought a print from him. Oh, actually, I bought 2 prints because a lot of the artists had the same deals going, like 1 print for 20, 2 for 30.
Right.
So I just went with the 2 for 30. He was like, I told him who I was on Twitter, and he was like, oh, okay, because, you know, we tweeted back and forth a time or two. He was like, I always thought you were going to be kind of bigger.
Ah!
he was like, you know, you got the name Tim Dahl, you know, it's, you know, you spent some big burly guy. It's like, nope, that's me.
So, yeah, you know, you're thinking of Agent_70, right?
Yeah. Oh, and also met cosplayer Valerie Perez, who there was no one at her table when I happened to come through. And for some reason, it never crossed my mind to actually get a picture taken with her. But, you know, she was looking good. She had the Wonder Woman costume on. And that was it for day one. Day two, of course, was the big day. Got there like 30 minutes after the con opened. Went to Norm Ratman's table, the inker on The Flash, and talked to him about Wally West and The Flash and the CW and the new TV show. And there was someone else there at his table, that a fan, and this big conversation about how the CW shows suck started.
Yes. 'Cause
the other guy was kind of in Dirt's camp of, you know, not being a fan of the CW shows.
The demographic.
Yeah, the demographic, which I understood. But he was cool. He actually showed me a copy of The Flash 32, which came out this week. He was like, be quiet. I can't show, you know, don't tell anyone I showed you this.
Hush, hush.
But I'm telling the world now.
Secret.
Yeah, I just kind of flipped through. I was like, okay, cool. And let's see. Met Van Jensen from Georgia. I didn't tell him who I was on Twitter until after the fact, but he was cool. Did I buy something from him? I did not. What else did I buy? I bought last. Scotty Young. I bought a print from Scotty Young on Saturday. He was cool. It's funny, like Scotty Young, you know, he always draws those like stick figured characters or little kids. So for some reason, I always thought he looked like the stick figure people he drew. But, you know, he's a regular looking guy.
That's funny.
Kind of big guy. I was kind of surprised how big he was. What else did I do? Oh, Kevin Eastman's line. So Kevin Eastman from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles lore was there. He definitely was. If anyone was like an attraction, it would have been him. Because, like, his line was crazy.
He was doing sketches, right?
I don't know what he was doing. I just kind of, like, walked by.
Because when I met him, he was doing sketches. They were quick sketches, but they were awesome. So on point. You know, like, they're just, you know, recognizably old school turtles. So, you know, the sketches didn't take long, but, you know, he put them together. They were just very well done. I don't recall how much they cost back then. It's been a long time. But, you know, I can totally imagine his line, you know, snaking around and around, because his sketches, while quick, are very, very good.
Yeah, was his wife there?
Here's kind of, I'm not sure. Was he there? Was she with him at New York?
Oh, a long time. No, this wasn't at New York. This is a long time ago at a smaller con in New York.
But, oh.
You know, like I said, I know that he does quick sketches, but they're very good.
Just about everyone in line had a green Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles t-shirt on.
Okay.
Now, remember, Art Adams had a good line, too, going.
Yes.
It's funny, like, Mark Waid was there, and I didn't even realize it till like, later on. He was, like, he wasn't, like, in the center like kind of everyone else was. He was kind of, had to go kind of search for him.
Yeah, he's learned his place. Going, man.
Yeah. Let's see. So, of course, there was more people there on Saturday. That Saturday we had a good crowd. Took a couple pictures, which I'm doing a whole post on HeroesCon, which I've been working on this week, so I'll have that up maybe by this weekend.
Right, and hopefully Tim doesn't beat my post on Special Edition New York. He probably will.
And I went to the writers panel, like Breaking Into Comics writers panel. Had like Matt Kent and Van Jensen, Frank Barbary, and another guy who I can't remember. I didn't really know who he was. Brandon something or another.
Okay.
But yeah, they had some good tips. Frank Barbary is another guy. I always picture him different than what he actually looked like. Like a regular dude. Go figure.
They're all regular dudes.
Yeah, I know. But all in all, great time at HeroesCon. I'll probably try to go back every year. It seems
No, wait. I gotta go back to that, though. It's like, not always. Like, John Byrne looks like young Santa Claus.
Okay, yeah. You
know? See, Dirk knows what I'm talking about. He's not like a regular dude. Like, he is distinctive. You know what I mean?
I'm trying to think of, like, who did not look like a regular dude that was there.
Have you ever seen Bernie Wrightson?
I don't know who that is.
He was the artist on a lot of the old horror comics in the 70s. Did, I don't even, like a bunch of the...
Swamp Thing.
Did he do Tales of Mystery? Tales of Suspense?
I thought it was Swamp Thing, Bernie Wrightson.
Yeah. Anyway, if you've ever seen, like, he looked like, like Lurch.
Yeah.
The Addams Family. I mean, was big and kind of creepy looking. Like, kind of like his artwork, actually.
That's
kind of
weird.
Oh, and Radicat just asked if Phil Noto was there. He said he missed him. I did find Phil right before I left Saturday.
Nice.
Not a regular looking guy. I was expecting something different with him, too. Lots of regular looking comic book people at this event.
So gotcha. So how did your budget hold out? Did you stick to it or did you break it?
It's funny because I took some extra money out Friday to take with me, and of course I left it and forgot it, so I had to go to the bank again when I got there. But I didn't buy as much stuff as I thought I was going to, so
okay.
I did a decent job. Oh, I actually went to a couple. I guess exhibitors, or whatever you call them, people to sell in trades. A lot of people had, like, $5 trades, so I bought... Yeah. Oh, yeah, speaking of which, I stopped by Joe Eisma's table, the artist on Morning Glories, and bought the first two trades from him. But besides that, I bought, like, two or three trades for $5. I can't remember what they are now. I guess I could have had my bag here to show everyone what I bought. Maybe I'll grab them later on during the show.
You get any good free stuff?
Yeah, I got, the Flash.
Did you get your Watcher Eyeballs?
No.
They didn't have any Watcher Eyeballs?
If they did, I didn't see them. Since we paid for the 3-day pass, I got the, Superman poster, which was, like, on the 3-day badge. Same picture blown up. The CW people were there, well, I guess from the local Charlotte affiliate, and they had a Plinko game to play for practice.
Oh, nice!
So I got... I just got two posters, a Flash poster and an Arrow poster.
Nice.
But yeah, good times.
Nice. All right.
Didn't stay around Sunday.
Why not?
I had to leave. Had to check out by noon, and plus I had a dog in the hotel, so.
Oh, okay. I was about to say, Sunday, we were talking off the air before the show started. Sunday is the best day to find deals, so if you're going to be, you know, on the show floor late, on Sunday,
people don't want to haul their stuff back. They'd rather just sell it and make a couple bucks. Yeah.
Yeah, so could have probably had some deals, but oh well. I heard the Sex Criminals panel Sunday was fun. Some couple got engaged. And
nice. I was about to say, next time, Sunday afternoon, you know what to do.
Yeah. I saw Lee and Cool had some nice articles, like recapping kind of each day and the panels the people went to, and the Robot Sits site from Comic Book Resources had day one, day two, and day three photo sites up. So you can check those out. It was funny, I was on the day one photo page on Robo Sits and saw that there's a guy from my town was actually there as an artist or a creator. And like a whole bunch of people from like the Atlanta, Athens area went up there. I was like, if I had known that, kind of did some networking.
How was the cosplay scene?
It was great. They did a cosplay group photo, or at least they tried to. I kind of just like walked by to watch the chaos as people tried to get up on the stage. But there was a Deadpool guy with the boombox sitting behind me at the. Oh yeah, I forgot. I didn't even mention that. I went to a Marvel artist panel Saturday with Stegman, Latour. Joe Quiñones, I guess his name is.
Right.
And Chris Anka. So that was kind of fun. But sitting right behind me was the Lantern Spectrum, like yellow, purple, red, green people dressed. You know, each person was a different lantern. I should have turned around and took a picture of them, but they were kind of, it was funny, like they were older gentlemen. I would have thought something like younger people would have did that, but that was cool. But yeah, the cosplay folks were representing. Roddy Cat sent me a Flickr link with all the cosplay pictures he took. So.
Oh, good, good, good. Yeah, because I have a few that I'm gonna post in my for my post on special edition. So hopefully, I was hoping you guys got pictures of that stuff. You know, I just wanted to see what the cosplay scene was like down there.
The best cosplay pic I took was of Tony Stark and Iron Man side by side. Of course, two different people. One person is Iron Man, one is Tony Stark. So, yeah.
Cool.
So just look out for the post when it goes up.
One little piece of news. I want to plug this real quick. We received an email this week from Josh Blaylock of Devil's Due Press. He's going to be heading to Capital City Comic Con in Austin, and he asked if he could stop at our store. Saturday, July 5th at Killens in Springfield, Illinois, Josh Blaylock is going to be there. He's going to have a bunch of his books. They got some new series coming out. They've got Squarriors, Solitary, which is a superhero prison drama, Eric Powell's new series, The Tales of Mr. Ree. He's going to have all that stuff available. And then he's going to have some old stuff. Devil's Due used to do the G.I. Joe, Hack Slash, right. Voltron, all that stuff. So he's going to have some of that stuff. And Mercy Sparks is one of the series they're doing now. So come on by. Come on down to Killens in Springfield. You can meet him. He'll sign autographs, and he'll have a bunch of stuff available.
Nice.
Plug.
Nice.
So just a little bit of news to discuss tonight. I had originally written up there that we need to discuss the May 2014 sales figures for the Comic Book Chronicles draft. But since I talked about the convention enough, we can say that for next week. See who's leading in the scoreboard. I believe Dirt probably is. With his event. Yeah, that guy. Let's see. Valiant named Warren Simons their editor-in-chief. He was already the executive editor, I believe. Or he had some fancy name like that. So, and Valiant's only had three or four editors in their existence, like Fabian Nieziezza. I forget the other ones now. It was like big names.
Wait, but this is all since the reboot, though?
Well, this is just like in Valiant's existence, I guess, whatever other incarnations they existed in.
Well, because in the other incarnations, it was mostly Jim Shooter.
Yeah, Jim Shooter. Yeah, Jim Shooter was a name they mentioned.
Okay, so then, yeah, they're doing the whole history. All right.
Yeah, the whole history. Actually, let me go ahead, since we've listed them, let me click the link to actually give everyone their props.
This is for all the editors-in-chiefs that have been waiting to have their name shouted out on the Comic Book Chronicles. Here's their moment.
This is your moment to shine.
This is what it's all about. This is why they did it in the first place.
Okay, so they've only had three: Jim Shooter, Bob Layton, and Fabian Nieziezza.
Bob Layton.
Nieziezza.
Nieziezza?
How do you say it?
No idea.
Nicaea. I don't know.
I always called it Nieziezza. DC had a big announcement. DC Comics announces new payment plan for creators and for colorists to receive cover credits. So, they're actually getting with the 21st century and doing direct deposits and all that good stuff.
Well, one of the things that they're doing that I found interesting is that they're actually going to pay people based on the sales of the books, as opposed to the number of units. And it's weird the way it plays out. If when they did it by units, if the book didn't sell that well, you still, I think, made a little bit more. But now that it's based on sales, if you have a book that skyrockets and does huge, then you're going to get paid a ton of money. And they are basically now going to count newsstand sales, digital sales, and direct market sales all the same. When they go to make their payments to people, instead of having a different scale based on, you know, whatever outlet it was coming through. Let's see, what was the other thing that was big about it? With the sales, because you're getting paid like per dollar, if they make like a 99-cent sale on Comixology, so the book is selling technically for less than what it normally does, then you don't get paid as much, because the book isn't selling for as much. But it could sell a lot more, you know, because it's on sale. So then you're going to get that bump of cash from selling the individual book.
It all kind of just makes sense. And as someone that wants to get into business, I need to actually understand how all this stuff works. It all just makes my head hurt.
Well, and apparently a lot of that comes out of the whole moving everything to Burbank and becoming more entwined with actual Warner Brothers studios and, you know, doing all of that.
Company, like being an actual business company.
Right, as opposed to being these guys in these offices kind of cobbled together. It's like, okay, you are part of the giant corporation. It's time to be, you know, part of the corporation. So
fully integrated.
You get 401ks. At least the actual DC employees, not the creators. So yeah, congrats. I mean, they're freelancers, right?
Yeah.
That's right.
But this should help a lot of people. You know, there have been complaints in the past about when something gets put together as a trade, or it goes to a foreign market, or it goes digitally, or whatever. You know, they weren't getting paid the same amount, or after so many years, they might not get payments on something, or, you know, like lots of weird stuff like this. And the idea is that, you know, from now forward, you know, if you're part of that comic, then when it becomes digital, you get part of that money. If it becomes a hardcover, you get part of that money. If it becomes, you know, trade paperback, you're going to get part of that money. If it gets reprinted as like the, you know, one of those dollar specials that they do randomly every once in a while where they reprint the first issue for a dollar and throw it out there like they do with Watchmen every so often, or the first Swamp Thing, or, you know, that type of stuff, then, you know, you're going to get payment off of that. And it's just, hopefully, it'll snowball. So people who work at DC for a long time and, you know, really put their heart and soul into that are going to, you know, have this sizable chunk of money that after a while they don't have to do anything and the money will still kind of come rolling in.
Yep.
Nice.
Let's see. Marvel's original Guardians of the Galaxy get ongoing Guardians 3000 series in October.
So are they going to call it Justice Guardians or Guardians League or?
Nah. Guardians 3000.
I'm waiting for Avengers 3000.
Guardians United or Guardians International, Guardians Dark. I'm going to start doing those. I mean, that's pretty blatant. You
know? Pretty blatant, yeah. So, see how that is. And that's from Dan Abnett and Geraldo Sandoval, who did the backup story in Guardians 14, I think it was. Guardians of the Galaxy number 14. So, all the old Guardians of the Galaxy fans that have been bitching about their poor property being ruined by Bendis can hush now, at least for now. I had to give Marvel credit for how they built this Guardians of the Galaxy into an actual franchise. Pretty remarkable. Gives me hope for Inhuman whenever they get that thing going.
Well, they need something to replace Fantastic Four. If they could just get Inhuman to replace X-Men, they'd be all
right. Yeah, right?
No.
Oh, which reminds me, did any of you hear the rumors that the plan is that the upcoming Axis crossover is going to lead to the relaunch of the Marvel Universe?
I did read that on Bleeding
Cool. You didn't have that in your notes. I was kind of surprised that you didn't choose that.
It's funny, like I read it, I think it was yesterday I read it. And
I might have read an older version of it.
I was like, oh, that's kind of cool, and I just closed the tab out after it was like three articles back to back that I had to read to catch up because I apparently missed them the day before. So the breakdown is supposedly Axis is supposed to be like the good guys are turned bad and the bad guys turn good, which is, you know, play on the word axis. Everything's flipped on its axis. Like, supposedly Cyclops and Havoc are supposed to be the main bad guys, and Cyclops was going to be the main bad guy, and the event was going to end with him getting killed and the Marvel Universe resetting itself. And so then with Cyclops, the main mutant out the way, that they don't have in the new universe, they don't have to have mutants or X-Men anymore. Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver will become Inhumans. I just it was too
some craziness.
Yeah, it was too much to believe. It's like, no, that's not gonna happen.
I can see them doing some sort of big, like, history altering event, going back to their whole Age of Ultron thing, and there's rips in the fabric, and, you know, canceling the Ultimate Universe and bringing Miles Morales in, you know, to be part of the regular Marvel Universe. Like, I can see that. I just don't see them totally wiping out mutants. Like, that doesn't make any sense, especially with the marketing and how much franchising and everything else available.
X-Men too big to...
Yeah, there's too much money that to get rid of them completely. Now, I could see them scaling them back a little bit and trying to push the Inhumans to take their place.
They should have kept the 200 mutant thing going if that was the case.
Yeah, but I could see them not pushing, like, not having... Yeah, Wolverine and the X-Men, Amazing X-Men, Astonishing X-Men, Nightcrawler, you know, like all of those different, I could see a lot of those kind of disappearing and going away and just having like an X-Men and an Uncanny X-Men, you know, and maybe have them crossed over with all new X-Men and maybe, you know, call it a day with those or something like that, get rid of all that other stuff, but I just don't see them wiping out mutants. That's just way too much they have invested in that to get rid of it.
Yeah, and there's some other stuff with Axis they were saying. I can't remember. Supposedly Quicksilver is going to join an Avengers team to match up with Age of Ultron when that comes out. I believe that rumor. I can see that happening.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. There's something else I was about to say. Oh, you were saying all the stuff with the time. Yeah, so with all the stuff with all the different universes and time, every book utilizing time travel, something, there's going to be some kind of big fallout with Age of Ultron and the time stream and the multiverses and stuff. Like, it's coming. It's going to be, maybe they merge them all into one somehow.
I just think they made too big of a deal about the fabric of the universe is ripped apart because of all the time travel and, you know, the all new X-Men can't go back to their original time period. It just seems like there's too much of them leading up to something's got to fix all that, and the idea that they would reboot the Marvel Universe in a sense and kind of do the DC thing where, you know, they would say there's some sort of event and like the end of every issue goes to like a white page, fades out to a white page, and then there's some new number one that happens and they've been around for 4 or 5 years, you know, so they can kind of have some stuff in the history, like with New 52. There's some stuff that may have happened, but some stuff that hasn't happened, and they can, you know, just kind of move it forward that way. So it's not completely cutting off everybody who and everything they've ever read, but at the same time opens it up to the new readers being that excuse.
I really hope they don't reboot the universe. We shall see, though.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. All right. So are we done with news?
Oh, and Eldon Nelson was cast as Daredevil's Foggy Nelson in the Netflix series.
Did we talk about Rosario Dawson being cast?
No, that happened Friday. I think after the show Friday.
Right. So yeah, so that's just another casting for the Daredevil Netflix series. So
who's she playing?
Exactly. We'll see how this cast comes together now.
Hey, supposedly, wasn't some guy cast to be in Batman versus Superman that they don't know who he's going to be playing?
Yes, I did see a name. I don't recall the name.
Some funny name guy.
Poor guy.
And so, you know, people are speculating if it's going to be he'll be playing Green Lantern or Nightwing.
So, okay. All right.
Whatever.
All right. Well, so I was about to say, just to add on, speaking of cons, for anyone heading or looking to buy New York Comic Con tickets, the 3-day passes went on sale today online and sold out within an hour. The Saturday tickets are sold out. Were sold out before the middle of the afternoon. They went on sale at noon, and I think they were sold out before 3. So there are still single day tickets left. Just go to the New York Comic Con website, and they will be available at a limited number of retail outlets in the tri-state area. So you know, if you guys are looking for New York Comic Con tickets, get on your horse and start looking, because you know, they're going fast and furious.
You get yours?
I did. I got mine at Special Edition.
Oh, they sold them there?
Yes, they did. You know, if you went to Special Edition, you had a...
You talked about last week, Tim. Where were you?
I don't remember stuff.
He was too busy worrying about going to Heroes Con, that's all.
That is true. All right, so let's get to reviewing some books for this week. Who read Superman 32?
I did.
Tell me how good it was or was not.
I liked it. What about you, Greg?
I enjoyed it quite a bit. I was really impressed with how well it came across. If I can pull up the cover here.
Are you a fan of Romita Jr.'s art to begin with, or are you sort of...
Yes. Yes, I am.
All right. I am, too. So I know that there are detractors out there and they see his name and his style. They just immediately go away from it. But I liked it. You know what it was reminiscent of? I hate to say this because I guess the power sets are similar and the look is similar. This reminded me of the late 90s Thor that he was doing, if you recall that. You know, lots of big cape flying action.
I'm looking to grab my copy here. Let's see here. I thought the artwork was good. I did think it would kind of distract me because he has been a Marvel guy for so long that seeing it, you know, in a DC book would, you know, kind of mess with me or whatever. But no, I thought it looked really nice. Mm-hmm. Whoever the colorist was on this, because I know he worked with Klaus Janson.
Laura Martin. She's a big Marvel colorist.
Yeah.
Is she really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she does a lot of Marvel. She was at Heroes Con.
Yeah, so I thought altogether, like, when you pick it up and look at it, it looks really nice.
Well, Klaus Janson is one of his longtime inkers, and he's good at inking J.R. Jr. pretty tight.
Yeah.
You know, he's got, you know, he definitely puts a good sharp finish on the pencils with the ink, so, you know, that's why they make such a good team.
And one thing you kind of knew the first, without going into, you know, of course, you know, spoilers for people who haven't read it, whatever, but the opening part of the story, you kind of understand what they're getting at and where they're going to be going with this.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say it's already better than Unchained.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
This seems much more focused. One of the problems with Unchained is that it was kind of jumping all over the place, and it wasn't really clear, like, what was the important part. Because that really did feel like Superman wasn't the most important part at times.
Right.
Where this feels like, yes, that is Clark Kent, Superman is definitely the star of the show. And they play on a lot of the, I don't know if you want to say tropes necessarily of Superman, but, I mean, they do have, you know, him fighting the giant robot gorilla, what's his name, Titano. They do have him, you know, fighting him just kind of as like a background piece. Like, right. It's not even a main part of the story that the giant ape is there. It's just like, oh, it's another day in Superman's life, you know, this is what he's doing. And it shows... another day in the life of Clark Kent, and it does this interesting contrast between the two of Clark Kent's normal life. It's like he you know, really doesn't have any real friends. Like, there are a lot of superhero friends that he hangs out with, but...
Right, this is the new status quo. That I definitely picked up on. You know, they put Perry White in there as the person to kind of explain that. You know, it's definitely somewhat jarring and put me back in my place as an older reader, because I had to be reminded, oh, that's right, these relationships that I've known for so long between these characters don't exist anymore, or exist on a vastly different level. So, you know, I kind of had to reset my understanding of the Superman mythos and the characters and how they're connected in the current continuity.
Well, and one of the things that really kind of struck me as I was reading this is that this very easily could have been the companion book to John Byrne's relaunch of Superman 86. Like, the way it this does feel like he is a much younger character, which I think is one of the problems that they had with some of the stories recently that have played so much with his history. And, you know, even though it's the new 52 and you're only like 2.5 years into it, it felt like he had, you know, all this extra history and all this extra baggage. Whereas this, you know, made it feel like it was something fresh and new and different again, and you're getting a new look at the character. He's definitely much younger. He's not as, you know, headstrong and strong-willed as what you normally think of him. And with it also, it did a good job of showing you Jimmy Olsen and showing you Lois Lane and some of the other stuff.
I don't know about Lois, but definitely Jimmy.
Well, it didn't go in depth with them. It didn't spend a lot of time on them, but it gave you a panel here, it gave you a panel there throughout the book, so that you know they still exist. And if you have those, like what you were saying, with your preconceived notions or the history that you have as a longtime reader, there's enough there to remind you that, yes, they are there, yes, they still exist, but things aren't exactly the same as you remember them.
Right.
And a lot of that stuff has to get reestablished. So... And one other thing is that John Romita Jr., there's a couple times where he drew stuff, and it kind of struck me as I hadn't really seen things drawn that way before with Superman. Like, for instance, there's one time he's sitting in his apartment, and he's looking through a photo album, and he hears off in the distance, you know, someone crying for help. And so he's doing the thing where he's ripping off his shirt, and he's flying out, but he does it as, like, this blur.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where you see... you know, part of Clark Kent's body, and then it just becomes this blur of color, of the Superman colors flying out the window. And I just remember marveling at that panel when I first flipped to it. Like, that's not something that you... Like, it totally makes sense. Like, it's iconic in its simplicity of the character, and it immediately stands out as something like, how come they haven't been doing that for 20 years?
Right.
You know? So I really enjoyed this book. Just about everything about it I was happy with, and I just can't wait for the next issue.
Nice. I liked it. I don't know if I'm as high on it, but I'm definitely willing to give it. I'm willing to give it another shot. I like that. You know, that J.R. Jr.'s art is clean. You know, like I said before, Klaus Janson does a very good job inking his work. Laura Martin did a great job with coloring this issue. So I'm willing, like I said, I'm willing to give it another go with another issue. You know, as you said, the opening few pages that set up the character that's introduced in this book, you recognize and you see where they're going. So that's probably enough for me to pick up the second issue and see what, you know, and see how they develop that.
Yeah. So I really enjoy it. Thumbs up. Everybody should check it out.
Nice.
I look forward to reading it. Hopefully it'll be a Superman book that I enjoy. And on the same topic, any of y'all been reading the Superman Dune books?
Here and there. I haven't read it in a while, though.
Yeah, I've kind of fallen behind on those. It's one of those things I'll get to eventually, but it's no longer my top priority.
Yeah, over the weekend, I read the Action Comics and Superman Wonder Woman issues. It's like, I remember reading somewhere, it was like, this whole Superman Doom is like 9 parts. And I'm like, why does it need so many parts to tell the same stuff over and over? Yeah, Superman's infected with Doom, and his friends are trying to stop him from being taken over by the evil tendencies of Doom, or not Doomsday, I keep saying just Doomed. It's like, if I could be cut...
I was about to say, Doom is offended that you're referring to Doomsday as Doom.
Yeah. Wow, Doom.
I guess my problem with Doomed is that I thought it was going to be much more of a compact... you know, it's like an action-oriented event, but it's not in Superman, it's not in Justice League. You know, it's in a couple books, so you get a couple chapters every month, and it's just... it's drawn on way too long. Like, it should have been in everything, you know, Action, Superman, Wonder Woman, Justice League, Superman, Batman, in all of those titles for like 2 months straight as a solid block to do this action-packed story to it's in your face and then it's wrapped up, it comes to a conclusion. But here it just feels like it's kind of dragging on, and now you've got, you know, this launch with John Romita Jr. and Geoff Johns. It's like, okay, well, this is a much bigger deal than that story. So that story should be over by now, but instead it's like, okay, well, obviously I can ignore it because this is started and that has nothing to do with this, you know?
Yep. And then Superman's fine here in Superman 32.
Yeah, even though he's still infected in the other books.
But, I mean, that a lot of books can suffer from that. So, okay, let's see. What did I read? Amazing Spider-Man number 3. First book of the week that I read. It was okay. That's about, I give it like an average rating. We learned some more about the mysterious Silk. She got the urge to try to leave her home with no windows, but some automated message played from her and made her feel guilty, so she decided to stay. What has happened? Black Cat was drawn beautifully by Humberto Ramos. I enjoyed her scenes. It looked like they developed a new costume, like a slight tweak to her costume. I like that. And Electro shows up near the end. And, of course, him and Black Cat try to make a partnership. And Peter tries to get his Parker Industry employees on his good side because they still fear him from when Dr. Octopus was in his body.
Right. There's a great scene in this where... I guess it's going to be part of Spidey's reintegration into the Marvel Universe, where he has to explain, well, it was Ock, and he was in my head, and he was taking over my body, and, you know, he's trying to do it with Black Cat, and she's not having any of it, so he starts to do his Superior Spider-Man impression, and I started to laugh just reading what Scott was having him say.
I forgot about that.
So that was actually my favorite scene in the book, where I kind of got a kick out of it. I was like, wow, you know, Slott's having some fun, you know, kind of redoing some Superior Spider-Man dialogue.
Yeah, he had it down to a T.
And you know it's coming back, so he's having some fun with the character, you know, with the with the dialogue. I enjoyed this book. It was okay as you can just sort of see it as the next step in the story arc. You know, not all that much is happening, but you do touch on a lot of the characters that are going to be playing a part in the Spider-Man world right now. We have some scenes with Mary Jane Watson's current boyfriend, the firefighter. We have some scenes with Anna Maria Marconi. That's her name, right?
Anna Maria Marconi.
Right. The, let me not call her. The little person. That's it. That's the politically correct term, right, guys? The little person that that fell in love with Spidey-Ock.
Spidey-Ock.
So, you know, there's some, you know, there's definitely some cool things in this issue. You know, there's a lot of Black Cat development, and, you know, we get to see where, you know, where a lot of this is going, you know, at least the role that Black Cat's going to be playing in the foreseeable future.
Okay. Let's see.
How about I throw one out there? How about, what did you guys read? Didn't read any of that. How about let's throw it to I See Dirt Red Justice League number 31.
Yes. I read that. That was Dirt. Decided to get to that.
There it is.
What did Dirt have to say?
Bling a bling. Oh yeah, yeah. Read what I had to say about that.
Oh okay, yeah.
Lex Luthor, such a.
No, go ahead and say it. Go ahead and say it.
Lex Luthor is such a douchebag.
Which is the absolute truth. That's the whole basis of this issue.
Pretty much.
So tell us why he is a douchebag.
All right, so at the end of the last issue, Lex Luthor shows up at Bruce Wayne's house, and he goes, "I know you're Batman."
Dun, bum, dun, dun. Bum, bum.
So this issue has the two of them having this conversation, and of course Lex is like, "I know who you are. There's no need to deny it anymore." And you know, Bruce is just continually like, "I don't know what you're talking about. You're crazy." And just doing that whole, you know, bit. And so Lex Luthor pulls out a gun with exploding rounds and shoots at the grandfather clock in the den, which exposes the walkway to the basement, to the Batcave, and says, "Okay, now conversation's over. Make me a part of the Justice League." And at the same time, while this is going on, he's pulling Captain Cold to LexCorp, and he's going to do these experiments on him. He's telling him he's bringing him in as an employee now that he's a hero and, you know, wants to make him part of the team and whatever. And he's, apparently he's going to exploit him for some nefarious means that we don't know yet.
Yeah, there's something afoot. What was Operation Wannabe?
Yeah, something like that.
Right. You know, that gives you a hint as to what's going on. If I recall, Captain Cold does not have any internal powers. It's just the cold gun, right?
Well, he has powers now, right?
In the New 52, I believe he does.
They gave all the votes their power, actual powers.
Oh, okay.
That they had before.
Right. I was just going to say I'm not as well versed in the current power set of the Rogues Gallery, but that was the gist of what I was reading, is that maybe they're trying to investigate his level of power and, you know, maybe try to, you know, there's something's going to come out of that because that's what they're testing for. So,
but I mean, beyond that, like, those are the big, like, story points. Mm-hmm. But then they also bring in the new power ring, the evil Green Lantern.
Yes.
Someone else takes over that. And I really like the way that they've done Power Ring in the New 52, how it's the ring controls the person, not the person controls the ring. Which I there's just something about that dynamic that I really enjoy. She's an unwilling partner in this whole superhero business. And at the same time, they have all of these fun moments on the Justice League Watchtower with Shazam.
I don't know if that was fun so much. I loved that.
Oh, come on.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, that was great. Him and Cyborg hanging out and... him using his magic powers in the Watchtower, like all of that was just. Well, I'm not giving away what happens. I'm just saying he uses his powers.
Right.
You also use that ding ding for the final page.
Oh yes.
Oh yeah, where we saw the reemergence of another classic team in the New 52. So yeah, like I just really enjoyed. I thought the big points with Lex and Batman and showing how, like, on the one side, you think that here he is after Forever Evil, that he is actually going to be a hero and a nice guy, but then it actually looks like he's got all this nefarious stuff still going in the background. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, they add in, I love what they're doing with Power Ring. I love the fun stuff they're doing with Shazam and still adding those, you know, comedic touches to the story. I love this team that they brought in. I've always enjoyed that unnamed, unspoiled team, for those of you who haven't read it yet. So overall, like I just thought it was a really great issue.
I liked it. I'm definitely digging. I think this has been a part of more recent DC books, even pre-New 52, with Luthor and Bruce Wayne / Batman kind of going head-to-head. You know, wit versus wit, intellect versus intellect.
Yeah.
You know, it's obviously a far more level playing field than Superman, no offense to Superman, you know, versus Lex, you know what I mean?
Well, that was always like brains versus brawn, whereas this is brains versus brains.
Exactly. So it's kind of, you know, it's nice to see, you know, a literal matching of wits between the two characters who are, you know, if you recall the old Overpower games, they probably have pretty high intellect scores.
Yeah.
hey, I still have my overpower cards.
I also felt that this, even though they're referencing, you know, stuff that has happened over the last couple of months, if maybe you're one of those people who kind of picked up Forever Evil, you know, here or there, but you didn't really follow the New 52, you could have picked this issue up and just started with this, and this would have worked out fine.
I'd agree. So, yeah, something. My memory keeps leaving me. There's something else I was going to mention about this issue, but I can't remember now. Probably wasn't important. Oh, yes, it was. So I think it was this week. Jeff Johns did a Reddit AMA and answered questions about the DC Universe, and he teased that there have been internal discussions regarding the Cyborg book. So it could be a solo book or a Cyborg and the Metalmen book. I think that was the most important piece of information he mentioned. He said there's plans for Simon Baz.
Ugh.
And he had, like, Justice League mapped out to, like, the year 2017 or something like that.
Jeez.
He's doing the Bendis thing.
Yeah. So. There you go.
All right.
Let me pull a book up. I'll go ahead and get my click of the week out the way. Miss Marvel number 5.
Nice. I did not get a chance to read this. I'm glad to hear that you liked it that much.
I did. It was kind of like her first time out as Miss
Marvel. Her first adventure? I gotcha.
Yeah, adventure as Miss Marvel, trying to rescue a friend of a friend or a friend's sibling from a house. And something else happened. So, you know, she failed, so she felt down, but then she had to get one of her best friends to kind of help her. One of her best friends happens to be like a science nerd, so he helps develop her costume, and she does like, it was like a long like training montage like you see in the movies of someone like training with their new
training
powers.
Training
montage. Like her running around a track and field.
Right. So you when know. She finishes, does she run up to the top of the mountain and yell, "Dragon!"
She did not.
Dragon!
She practiced
that's a missed opportunity then.
she practiced in her large state, and she practiced shrinking and growing. And, you know, once she was, after the training was done, she went back and was successful, of course, and they revealed the master, the big evil boss person at the end of the issue, and that's just kind of a hilarious image to see. But, overall, just fun book, and there was a nice touching moment with her and her dad and all that stuff about, you know, how her family is worried about her, you know, succumbing to American ways and not being the child they, you know, helped raise in the world. Very touching. It touched the feels, all the feels.
Nice. I gotta get around. I gotta read this now. I'd meant to read it. I think I'm behind by an issue, so I guess I have to catch up. But that's cool. Glad to hear it. And your click of the week.
My click of the week.
Nice. All right. Dirk, you want to throw something out, or do you mind if I?
Oh, go ahead if you got some.
Did anyone read Batman number 32?
I've not had a chance yet. I was just thinking about that, actually.
I don't want to spoil too much then. I just want to say that this is a leading candidate to be my click of the week because it's a great penultimate issue to this, you know, story arc. There's a lot of stuff happening. There's a lot of great developments. This is obviously not new reader friendly because you definitely need to have a fairly clear understanding of what the stakes are and what's going on and what's been happening in the past few issues. But there's a lot of action, there's a lot of wheels turning and characters playing their roles. So, you know, the roles that are, you know, there's just a lot of things going on in this book. So I give Capullo a lot of credit. You know, the art is top notch. You know, Snyder's done a real, you know, a bang up job telling the story, and I'm looking forward to the next issue to see how this all wraps up, how Zero Year wraps up. You know, the Riddler is definitely getting a nice push from the story.
Yeah, I'm going to say this particular story has done a really good job of making him much more than that watered down version of the Joker that he tended to be for a long time. I really
He was the Joker, but with kind of an intellect as opposed to a psychosis. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but this definitely makes him something different.
Yes.
And I really appreciate that. But no, I haven't had a chance to actually sit down and read this one yet.
Right. So, like I said, this is definitely approaching. This is a leading candidate to be my kick of the week this week. I like it. If anyone is looking to catch up on this, these books will be collected very soon in a trade paperback. But you know, I'm sure they're still. You can still probably find them at your local comic shop. You know, it's definitely worth checking out and catching up on.
Actually, let me, if I can find it here. Here, let me do a couple offbeat, small press ones. First of all, Red 10, number 6. Red 10, for anyone not familiar with it, has been the story of basically taking an Agatha Christie-type mystery and making it about superheroes. The psychotic Joker-type character apparently lures these superheroes to this remote island and is killing them one by one until they discover that he's actually, his body is on the island. He's dead. And whoever has killed him is the one who lured all these superheroes there and is killing them one by one. And you find out that as time goes on, that each of these characters, one of these characters is dying basically every issue. And you're finding that all of these characters have major flaws or major controversies or something they've gone through that they were exonerated for a crime, but you find out that they actually were guilty. This issue, number 6, actually takes a twist in the story. This is one of those moments where you find that something that you've assumed all along through issues 1 through 5 is actually not true. And it's one of those, because of you're seeing everything through their eyes, that they've all assumed something, so you've assumed it as well. And, you know, obviously I'm trying not to spoil the story, but this has really been written as an intense mystery. Like, there is, like, real thought process going on, who's stabbing each other in the back, and... you know, you're assuming certain things because you've seen certain things, but you haven't seen other things. You know, and just the way it plays with you with that whole mystery aspect. So I've really enjoyed this series, and I love the way it keeps you guessing. And it's a lot deeper than a lot of other books out there, which I really enjoy the way it gets into the story and everything else. So, I mean, if you like a good mystery, the Red 10 actually takes that classic mystery story, and just it happens to be superheroes, but it could, you know, just as easily be anybody. It just so happens that they have powers. Also, Letter 44, the new issue, came out this week. This is Charles Soule's book from Oni Press that deals with aliens in space. Aliens are out in our solar system, and they're building some sort of giant device, and these astronauts have been sent. And while at the same time you're finding that the new president who's taking office has found this out from the old president. So a lot of the stuff that's been going on that he didn't agree with politically was actually being done in order to prepare us for this possible alien invasion. The problem, I've loved the series so far. Every issue has been great, and this has been my click of the week many times. But the problem with this particular issue is that it's a flashback issue to the people who became the astronauts who went off into space, and it kind of feels like he wasn't sure how many issues this series was going to go, so he had a lot of steam and momentum, and now that it's selling well and is doing pretty good, now he kind of slowed down and he's going back to these flashbacks to kind of pad the story out a little bit, so
fill out the trade arc.
Yeah, so this doesn't feel as important as everything else, because before it's like every issue built on the importance of the issue that came before. You know, something was revealed, some new mystery came about, or they're that much closer to figuring out what's going on with this big contraption being built, you know, out by Jupiter or whatever it was. And in this one, it's just kind of like, okay, now we're going to kill some time and do something else for a while. So I was a little disappointed in how that turned out. I mean, I still like the series. It's so well written, but I just kind of felt like, all right, you know, now we're just trying to throw some stuff out for the sake of filling time and not having to wrap up as quickly. Let's see. I'm trying to find Thaniel. Thaniel number 4 came out this week. I'm trying to find the cover so I can throw it up there.
Yeah, I gave them a shout-out on Twitter this week and mistakenly credited the wrong writer. That was, I call it Seek the writer when he's actually the editor.
Yeah.
That's what happens when I'm trying to craft a tweet at work.
This issue takes a left turn kind of out of nowhere. It's only out of nowhere because you don't think that they would have the guts to do that in this story. I guess is the best way to say it. Basically, Thaniel has found out... In the last issue, he finds out that he's actually the son of the Grim Reaper. He's the son of Death. And Death has actually cultivated this life around Thaniel so that Thaniel can become the Grim Reaper to take over for him so that he can actually retire and die and fade off and, you know, whatever. He's been doing it for eons. He wants to be done with it.
He moved to Florida.
Yeah, so... I'm gonna open a deli. I don't know. And so,
play shuffleboard. Oh,
this is all about, you know, how he is supposed to take over, and this is his role, and everything in his life has brought him to this point. And Death starts telling him about how the universe really works, and you know who God is, and everybody's importance in the nature of humanity, and it gets, you know, really deep. It's talking about these, you know, huge kind of theistic and universal concepts, and then, like I said, because something happens, there's a twist that I definitely do not want to spoil because this was fantastic. There's a twist there, which it seemingly comes out of nowhere because they never have the guts to do something like this in a comic. I'll just say that much. So it really kind of, like, I got done with the book, and I set it down, and I actually just kind of stared at the wall for, like, 5 minutes thinking about what I had just read. It blew me away. It was actually really, really good. I was really surprised with what happened, and it all makes sense. You know, it's not like one of those swerves in wrestling where suddenly a good guy's a bad guy because they need a bad guy, you know? This is one of those swerves that... It makes sense. You just don't expect anyone to ever do it, and they did it, and it just it really worked out really well. So, I really enjoyed this book. Now that it's done, you know, 4 issues. This is the end of the series. So, there may be a trade coming, or you know, if you were going to buy it digitally or whatever. Now it's all done, so you can sit down, you can read all 4 together as one story. It's definitely worth checking out.
Cool.
All right, what do you got?
Let me see what I can throw out there. Rapid fire. New Avengers, number 20. I like this book. There's obviously some drama involved because this involves the New Avengers team on another parallel Earth that is basically the other half of the incursion that is threatening the existence of the 616 Earth. And it's the New Avengers kind of basically becoming the bad guys in the story and trying to, you know, basically, you know, looking out for self and protecting the 616 Earth and in the process taking down the heroes from another Earth who are, spoiler alert, very much analogs of the Justice League of America.
Yeah, so that's what I saw Justice that. League.
So, yeah. You know,
that was fun.
Yeah, that was, you know, it was pretty cool to see, you know, kind of what would happen if the Justice League took on this group of new Avengers.
Although it's a lie, because Justice League would totally win.
What made the fight even better was Valerio Schiti's art.
Yes. Quality stuff. I'm regretting not looking for, because I didn't have anything for him to sign other than the Young Guns book that Marvel was giving out for free, and I regret not bringing something for him to sign at Special Edition New York. So. But you know, I definitely enjoyed the art, and this is another leading candidate for Click of the Week for me. Rapid Fire, let me throw out Fantastic Four number 6. Not so happy with this book. It seems like there were three story threads being woven through this, and this story I think is definitely on the receiving end or suffering for being involved with Original Sin. It's obviously on the cover, but it's not the lead story. It's not the first thing that you see when you open the book, so it's kind of off-putting. It's funny, Tim was mentioning this before about how Kelly Sue DeConnick was talking about how... what was the event? I forget.
Infinity.
Ruining... kind of threw a wrench into her plans for Captain Marvel. I can definitely see Original Sin throwing a wrench into Robinson's plans for Fantastic Four, and it's pretty evident in this issue. Rapid Fire. Did anyone read All New Ghost Rider number 4?
I did.
So, basically, we have here an instance where Robbie Reyes, the vehicular Ghost Rider, as opposed to the motorcycle Ghost Rider, display some restraint, and the issue is really more about what's happening to the Mr. Hyde drug influenced bad guy that they're trying to develop. The story basically revolves around that character, so it's kind of establishing this character as a credible threat to a Ghost Rider type character, you know, who is, you know, obviously somewhat magic-based, somewhat, you know, demonically powered, so you have to see, you know, you kind of have to have a credible threat to go against that, and they're trying to develop this character into that. So that's what this issue is about, and I guess what they're building towards is, I think next issue is the finale of this first arc, so that's, you know, you can see the setup for a final issue in this issue. One more thing I want to throw out, Aquaman number 32. So I was definitely doing some Super Friends reading this week. I covered all the Super Friends issues I could.
what did you read, Flash?
I did not. I tried to cover all the ones that I could, and I couldn't get to the Flash. So Aquaman number 32 is actually, I liked where this book was going, but for the new villain that they're trying to introduce, named Chimera, the look of the villain, and you can kind of figure out that it's going to be an amalgam of different looks because of the character's name, Chimera. But
I've heard that name before.
Exactly, it's a mythical beast, and you know, it's made up of different animals, so you can kind of guess where that's going. But back to this story, you know, there's a great story with Mira. But in terms of the villain that they're trying to introduce in this book, the look kind of was a little bit too close to, the monster from the Black, is it the Black
Creature
Lagoon?
From the Black Lagoon.
Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yeah.
Just on first glance, at first blush, when I looked at it, I was like, oh, wait, that looks a little bit too much like the Creature from the Black Lagoon. But there's definitely different. There's differences. There's stark differences. But maybe it's just the way the character was drawn in this first appearance. I just stopped. It took me out of it took me out of my suspension of disbelief, and just made me stop and think, oh wow, that looks a little bit too close to the Creature from the Black Lagoon. But that's just me. That's a personal thing. Oh, and last, quick shot review. Wolverine number 9, not happy with this issue. It was very hard to read. I'm not sure if I'm going to like how they deal with Wolverine getting killed off. I think the best part of this comic was the cover by Steve McNiven. You know, it was all downhill from there. It's kind of sad.
Chris Anka drew it, right?
Yes. Yes. But even, you know, like the artwork? The stylistic artwork is okay. I'm not a fan. But, you know, it's, you know, it definitely is decent storytelling. I give Anka a lot of credit for, you know, telling a decent story, you know, with his images. I'm not a fan of where the story's going. I don't particularly like this, and I'm pretty glad that this is not on my actual pull list. Hmm. Says a lot.
I mean, ever since finding out Wolverine was going to die, all the story, like, I guess I complained, was it last week or week before last, I complained about that? All the books seem to be, like, in, like, a holding pattern.
Like, well, this one is hurtling towards his death, so, you know, it's not in a holding pattern. I'm just not happy with the way they're telling the story, with what the story that they're telling.
I don't like depressed Moni, depressed, complaining Wolverine. He's just been moping around. Just been moping around, being all sad, and trying to fake be an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. or whatever the story was. Going undercover and killing a life model decoy. And I don't know, it's just kind of been enjoyable. But then again, I don't really read Wolverine solo books anyway. The only reason I've been reading it is because they're doing something with them, a.k.a. killing them. So I figured I need to read the story leading up to it. Okay,
I'll go. You don't really care?
Yeah, I don't really care. But the story could be interesting. Just kind of not. Uncanny Avengers 21. Kang's real plan is revealed. Everyone's been saying that this was the finale of Avenge the Earth, but I guess maybe it could be, but it seemed like it wasn't the end because, like I said, Kang does something at the end.
Oh, I forgot to mention this. I didn't put this on my list. I didn't. I think this was like the first thing I read because I wanted to see where this was going.
Yeah, me too.
Honestly, I was happy to see Remender kind of finally moving the story to where, you know, he wanted to get it to at some point. You know, it's taken a long time to get to this point.
Yeah. Like I said, yeah, glad the story is moving along. Guardians of the Galaxy 16, Captain Marvel finally shows up.
Finally.
And another member of the Guardians.
Daddy doesn't know best, apparently, in this, right?
And another member of the Guardians reappeared, who I had forgotten about.
Oh, yeah.
Three artists credited. So we had Nick Bradshaw, who I'm not the biggest fan of, but his art's all right. And it's Dave Marquez and some other guy. So, and the story is still continuing. The Guardians are all split up around. Every space criminal or space empire has a member of the Guardians, it seems.
Right.
Avengers Undercover number 6. It was okay. It was a Death Locket chase story of them. They've been with the Masters of Evil working for them like for the past couple of weeks. Of course, they decided they're going to work for the Masters of Evil to try to take them down from the inside. But everyone except Death Locket knows about the plan. So this issue was like Chase trying to get her alone so he could tell her about it. You already talked about All New Ghost Rider. Original Sin, Hulk versus Iron Man number 1. This was probably the best Mark Bagley art I've seen in a while.
Nice. I had not read this.
Art was nice. Kind of picks up after the orb unleashes the secrets from the Watcher's eye. And it's like a mixture of Banner is getting some of Banner's getting some of Stark's memories and Stark's getting some of Banner's memories mixing together. So, That's it for my...
Well, is it... I mean, is there anything, like, really shocking about it? Like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that...
Nothing yet. All you get is supposedly, like, I guess Tony Stark fiddled with the bomb that created the Hulk.
Okay.
So that's what we get so far. Of course, maybe, you know, since it's old memories, the how factual that is remains to be seen. That's, at least that's what I say.
Right. All right.
That's it for my... And I started reading Outcast number one from Image, but I'm only like 3 or 4 pages into it. I like the letter from Russ Wooten, I believe.
I'm trying to find it now. I started reading it, and I got maybe about a third of the way through, and I just kind of felt like I didn't really... Like, nothing was grabbing me. Like, it didn't hook me right away, and I kind of expected it to, and it didn't. So I just kind of like, nah. So then I just started kind of flipping through it, you know, not really paying that close attention. And by the time I got to the end, I was just kind of like, I don't even know if this book's going to last. Here it is. I just kind of felt like, in the same way Thief of Thieves kind of came out and was this big deal when it launched, and then you really didn't care that much about the characters, so after a couple issues, it just kind of fizzled out and died away. That's kind of how I felt reading this, where, you know, at the end of Walking Dead 1, you had this one character who you stayed with, and you wanted to see how he survived. Like, everything seemed to be against him, and you empathized for him, and you wanted to know how he's going to make it. But at the end of this issue, I don't know that I really cared about the guy. Like, I didn't feel like I was really drawn to him, and I didn't really feel like there was anything, you know, that made me feel like, oh, I really got to tune in to see what happens to him, you know?
Right.
So I just kind of felt like this is going to be another one of those where it's, the first issue is $20 on eBay now, but, you know, in 5-6 months, it's going to be one of those books that, you know, no one really cares about again.
Ouch.
Yeah, as someone that doesn't read Kirkman books, not because I don't want to, it's just I'm trying to start from the beginning on Invincible, which I've mentioned a time or two, and I don't read Walking Dead, so I'm not really familiar with his work, but it's like, you know, this is going to be the next Walking Dead, get in from the beginning, so I'm going to make sure to try to at least read the first couple issues, and I'll see what I feel about it after that. It might be the same as when I read Trees number one. Art was fine, but rest of it, eh. I'm not a, and like, I've learned I'm not the big Warren Ellis fan, so usually his books I don't read anyway, so.
Well, did you take a look at all since it came out this week? Did you look at Trees number two at all?
Not number two.
Okay.
I read number one, and I was like, eh.
Yeah.
Did you?
I kind of flipped through it, but I kind of felt the same way you did, where it's like, I get the premise that these aliens have landed on Earth, but they don't see us as anything that's consequential, so they don't really care. So they're just kind of doing their own thing. But then there's some sort of plant or flower or something that the scientist is like, oh, well, this looks interesting. It's like, well, why? You know? Like, who cares? Like, you gotta give me more than that, you know? So I just kind of felt like, maybe it might go somewhere in a couple issues, but it just seems like there's nothing really happening right now.
It's probably going to be pretty... It'll probably be a good series. It's just not up my alley.
It might be one of those things where he takes like 3 or 4 issues before something big and important finally happens. But the problem is...
Oh, yeah, but the
problem is one of these... It's one of those series where you do something like that where everybody quits by like the third issue, you know? So then you do something big and everyone's already left.
That's funny.
It wouldn't surprise me. I guess Kyle number two came out this week too, but I read the first issue of that and I was like, nah. It was too dark as far as the colors. I could barely see what was going on sometimes. I couldn't tell the characters apart either in that book.
I did read Dream Thief.
Is this like a continuation of something else?
Yeah, there was an earlier series that was just called Dream Thief, and mm-hmm. now they've made a follow-up that is, if I can find it, what is that, Dark Horse? Yeah, I think that's a Dark Horse book, if I can find it. I've got the actual print copy sitting here. Dream Thief Escape is what it's called. And it is a continuation. One of the things that they do in the first book is this guy puts on this mask. He finds this mask, and he kind of puts it on and plays around with it, and he falls asleep, and when he wakes up, he's murdered somebody. And he has the memories of what happened while he was asleep. A spirit came into his body and used his body to get revenge on people that did them wrong and led to their murder in the real world, or originally. And so they use his body while he's asleep in order to exact their revenge. And one of the things that they established in the first series was that this is a problem his dad had as well. And his dad, you know, left when he was a kid. He never really knew him. But he learns that his dad had the same ability, and his dad died. But there's this man in prison who claims to be his father. You know, this is a 20-something, maybe early 30s at the most, white guy, and there's like this 60-year-old black man in prison who's talking like his dad, has the memories of his dad, you know, knows everything that his dad knew, and he's trying to figure out, well, how did this happen? Well, it's because, of course, when he wakes up from doing whatever he's done, he's got the memories of the person who took control of his body. And so that's how he can not only remember what happened, but he remembers why they wanted revenge and how they got revenge and who did them wrong. And in the first series, all of the murders were somehow connected to each other. You know, it kind of took you a while to go through and kind of figure out what the connections were. So in this one, he's trying to meet back up with this guy in prison because he's got the memories of his dad. You know, basically his dad's personality is in there as part of this guy. And so he wants to get the guy out of prison and kind of, you know, reconnect. This is the way to reconnect with his father, really, is this guy who's got his memories inside his head. And there's something going on with that guy. So now that he's kind of figured out his life and he wants to, you know, figure out what's going on with his dad, there's some sort of mystery surrounding his dad. There's something unresolved from when his dad had the powers and everything that happened with his dad's murder. And so it's like you got through the first series and you kind of resolve this, you know, mystery, whatever. And then the second series, there's this new mystery, which is kind of a bigger mystery that, you know, plays a bigger part in what formed him, you know, early in his life and took his dad away and whatever. So I think it does what it needs to do as a sequel, where it kind of broadens the scope. You know, it draws in more characters and it makes it a bigger slice of this guy's life, whereas the first one was compact over, you know, like a week or two, whatever, while everything's happening. Now some time has passed, so now the world he's in is bigger. He's, you know, interacting on a grander scale, and so I just really like the way it kind of opened it up and moved it to that next plateau. So it's a good series, and it's definitely worth reading. But if you're going to read this one, you really got to make sure that you read the first one, because there's so many details and so many... Because of the way everything was connected, there's so many small things that kind of, you know, played into each other that they reference back, that led to clues, that led to something else, that you really do have to read through the first one in order for this series to make sense. But, I mean, why would you read the sequel if you didn't read the original, right?
Right. Yeah. You know what you're getting out of it.
I guess.
So, it's good. It's good. It's worth checking out.
Cool. All right.
And your clicks or picks, quick picks, or should we just go straight to the clicks?
Yeah, clicks. I was about to say we knew. It seems like we all sort of read a lot this week. So
yeah, and we actually got them all out. So good job, fellas.
Awesome.
Well, I said my click of the week was Miss Marvel, number 5.
Dirt, you go ahead. I'm still debating.
I'm really torn because I want to pick Superman just because of how much I enjoyed it, mm-hmm. how good it was, and how much I think it's a great, you know, jumping on point for a new reader. But I think instead, if I can find it in my file, here it is. instead, I actually am going to go with Thaniel number 4.
Okay.
Because it, like I said, it was one of those things that when I got done reading it, I just had to set it down and stare at the wall and just think about what had happened for several minutes afterwards. Wow.
It was that deep.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it really, like I said, it does something. I don't want to spoil, but it does something that you never expect comics to do these days, just because of the business of how things are structured and the way they work. You just always kind of have a certain cynicism about how things play out. And this,
gotcha.
You know, they've got the freedom to do what they're going to do, and they totally defied it. So,
cool.
Yeah, and it's also probably one of those things in the next week or so I'm going to sit down and just read all 4 in a row.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm going to do now that it's over. This is the first arc, or is it just a 4-issue limited series?
As far as I know, it's just a 4-issue limited series.
Okay. All right, so I think that's what I'm going to do now that it's over, is just sit down and read all 4 in a row in one shot and see how it reads for me. As for my click of the week, I'm going to stick with my guns. I'm going to go with Batman number 32, because I'm definitely enjoying how the story is coming to crescendo. You know, there's definitely a great development of the Riddler in the zero-year storyline. As you know, as I was saying earlier, and as Dirt was contributing with also, is that you know, they're making the Riddler out to be far more than what he used to be, which was kind of not a complete Joker ripoff, but definitely a derivative character. What was more like a derivative character. So I'm enjoying this. It's, you know, I think about, you know, some of the conversations I had with people at Special Edition NYC, you know, people who maybe weren't the biggest comic book fans, and were asking me, you know, after I sort of let it drop that I do this, that I do co-host the Comic Book Chronicles, and, you know, asking me what, you know, what I like, what's out there, what would I recommend, and, you know, what was up there in terms of recommending books for people who just want to pick something up and get into either reintroduce themselves to the comic book collecting habit, or, you know, something to introduce new readers to. I consistently said Batman as one of those books. So, you know, especially, you know, the Snyder and Capullo Batman. So, you know, I definitely give this run a lot of credit, and, you know, this storyline has been it's taken its time to develop. It's definitely a little bit more Remender-y than I'd like it to be, you know, or even Hickman-y, you know. And speaking of Remender, you know, Uncanny Avengers is definitely a contender for my click of the week this week because of how we're finally getting some payoff to the story. But I'm going to stick with Batman, and, you know, surprise, surprise, DC wins the week for me.
And I got to throw out real quick, my son wanted to make sure that everybody was aware of this. His pick of the week, his click of the week, is the Super Secret Crisis War from IDW.
Wow!
He said that this was one of the best comics he's ever read.
Wow!
Not about
Mojo
Okay, so basically the concept of this is that they've taken a whole bunch of these Cartoon Network properties and they've made a crossover story.
Oh my God.
So it's got Ed, Edd, and Eddie. It's got the Powerpuff Girls. It's got Samurai Jack.
Wow.
It's going to have, I think there's an upcoming Johnny Bravo crossover with
wow.
it.
Wow.
Ben 10 is in it.
Holy cow.
And he is not familiar with Samurai Jack or Ed, Edd, and Eddie. He kind of knows who Samurai Jack is because he's seen the ads and whatever, but he tried reading one of them one time and he really couldn't understand what was going on.
Right, he's got to watch the cartoons.
Yeah, and because Samurai Jack gets pretty dark and deep sometimes, even for, you know, cartoon. But he said that this was the last thing he read that he liked this much is when they did the crossover with Mega Man and Sonic. And even that was one that I even enjoyed.
Right.
I read that along with him. He said that this is probably the best thing he's read since that. This is, like, the greatest thing. The way they brought all the characters together was really cool, and he just really enjoyed the way that they were able to mix them together. And it's funny because I flipped through it while he was sitting there talking to me about it, and it's like when you go to the part that's Ed, Edd, and Eddie, the artwork looks like that cartoon. Hmm. And when it's the Powerpuff Girls, it looks like that cartoon. And, you know, it's like you have these different characters who have these different art styles, and they retain those art styles when they're together, which I nice. Thought was really neat. You know, a lot of times you see, you know, Superman, Batman, it's whoever's drawing Superman draws Batman. Mm-hmm. He looks kind of like Superman, but with a cowl, you know, instead of the big S on his chest. But this, they actually, you know, made sure that it looks like the cartoons. So when you get those characters, they look exactly like those characters in that animated style. So, you know, he loves Ben 10. He loves the Powerpuff Girls. He loves, you know, all those superhero cartoon books. And so the fact that they brought them all together like this, he just said it was the greatest thing ever.
Nice.
And he's 9.
Good to hear.
So if you got a 9-year-old or someone around that age, then it's a good book for them.
Excellent.
Cool. So that is tonight's episode of Comic Book Chronicles. I want to thank everyone for tuning in live tonight. And for those watching on the replay, can't forget about y'all. Make sure to go to the website, theclicknation.com. Go to Dirt's website, popculturenetwork.com.
Please do.
Follow us on our Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDogg98 and at TheClickNation. Dirt is at PCN_Dirt. Agent 70 is at Agent_70. And Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerd Sneet. So we'll be back next week to give you all your comic book news and reviews, and hopefully we'll get to the rankings in the Comic Book Chronicles draft.
And be on the lookout for posts from Tim Dog and Agent_70 about our recent comic book convention experiences.
Yes, definitely look out for that. So we are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Peace!